Well, holding on to Mvolvo and Aleph, a little bit behind, we'll see what we can do. Mvolvo and Aleph by the beginning of the Gemara. So the Mishnah told us about the basic criteria you need for the Egla Arufa. We said that the Mishnah said that it has to be an Egla, a calf, asher l'moshcha b'ol, that has never pulled with a yoke. V'hein ha-mum possible, but a mum does not possible it. Unlike a korban or unlike a paradoma. That's what the Gemara is going to be discussing now. The Gemara says, V'hein mum possible egla m'kavachomer. Shouldn't we say a kavachomer that a mum would possible the egla arufa? U'ma pora she'en ha-shonim possible b'ol mum possible. The paradoma, the age does not possible it, no matter how old it is. It's actually in the Holikos, Rabbi Eliezer, and the Chachamim, and the Mishnah, but according to the Chachamim anyway, the Par Adumah can be however old, not a problem. And practically speaking, they wouldn't let it become too old because it all developed black hairs or whatever, but in principle, there's no age limit on it. And yet, Mum possible, but a Mum possible the Par Adumah. Egla, Shishanim possible, so the Egla, which when it's past a certain age, it's possible, according to Rabbi Eliezer, once it's past its first year, once it's the Chachamim, once it's past its first 2 years, then it's possible. Ain't a din she a mum possible? How much more so that a mum should possible it? The answer is no. Shiny hasim, it's different because the amar krok, as the pasuk says, by the par adumah asher ain bok mum. The pasuk says that there's not in it a mum. The word bok is a miut, just like we had earlier in the sefer that the word bok was used as a miut about the dinim of seita. Bok mum possible, vein mum possible egla. So only in it, in a par adumah, does a mum possible, not the egla arufa. Okay. By that logic, Elamei Asa Lo Yerushar Avodis Poslus Bar. In that case, then why do we, let's go to the Par Adumah now? Why do we say that any other kind of work why do we say that any other kind of work passes it? Now the thing is like this: when by the Par Adumah, the pasuk just says Par Adumah Tumim Asher Lo Yevamum Asher Lo Ola Ola Ha'Oil. The pasuk just says there that a yoke has not come on. It doesn't say anything about other kinds of work. By the Egla Arufa, the Torah uses a double expression. Asher le ubad bar, that it was not worked with. Asher le moshcha ba'ol, that it did not pull with a yoke. So therefore, by the egla arufa, fine. We see it can't have done any kind of work. Asher le ubad bar. But then, why don't we say then by the par adumah, the genie is any other kind of work possible? It. Why? By that same logic, we should say it says bah by the egla arufa as well. Asher le ubad bar, asher le moshcha ba'ol. Use the same mirth bah. And say, therefore, that only by the Egla Arufa does other kind of work possible it, not by the Par Adumah. Alona Omer, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Rav. So why do we find that Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rav, Hiniya Chaleo Oida Shal Sakim Sula, by the Par Adumah, if you put on it an Oida of sacks, I'll explain in a second what that is, Sula, then it's possible, even though that's not a yoke, over Egla Achkimshach. By an Egla Arufa, it only becomes possible if it pulls with it, meaning if it actually walks carrying this burden.
If it stays, no.
What is oida shel sakin? So Rashi says over here it means a bundle of sacks. Either Rashi elsewhere, I think in Avodah Zarah, or something that says it means like a bundle of empty sacks. There's other explanations also. The Aruch brings the possibility that oida means like the rope or whatever that you use to tie together the sacks. So the chiddush is not even the sacks themselves that are used to carry merchandise, even the oida, even just the rope, are ready for pasulot if it. And then there's a third possibility that Rambam seems to understand oida shel sakin as basically a garment made out of sacks, like you would use for an animal. So if there's a general rule, both with the Par Adumah and with the Egla Arufa, there's a general rule, if it's carrying something that's necessary for its own use, that doesn't make it possible. For example, in bad weather you would cover the animal with sacks, let's say, for example, to keep it dry, and that would be allowed. Yeah. Or, with either one. Or for those other examples, let's say, for example, it's a wild animal and you need to put a collar on it in order to control it, or whatever. Those kinds of things are possible. What possible it is if you put something on it that's not needed for the animal's own comfort or whatever.
Not even to work.
It doesn't even have to be to work. It could just be, for example, in the case of paradroma, let's say you're out in the field with it, you're wearing your coat, you're hot, so you take off your coat and put it on the animal. Even without the animal moving, it'll become possible. By the egla, it has to move. So we see that other kinds of work do pass all the Par Adumah. Why? If you're saying that both by the Par Adumah limit that mumim don't pass all the egla arufa, then say the other way around, that both by the egla arufa means only that work passes it, but it doesn't pass all the Par Adumah.
If you cannot do the thing in reverse, it means it cancels the whole reasoning?
No, that's what we're asking. Yeah, that's what we're asking. If the word boh in one place is meant to be a mute, then in the other place it should also be meant to be a mute. Mm-hmm. The answer is shiny. Part of the opinion, oil, ma'egla. Fine, but the difference is, by Par Adumah, we do a xeda shava on the word oil. By Eglah Rufa it says Asher Mosh oil. By the Porah Adruma it says Asher Ola oil. So we use the word oil as a Gzeira Shava to teach us that the dinim that applies to the Eglah Rufa, that any kind of work, also applies to the Porah. Nu, then the question is Eglah Nami Tesi Oil El Mitzorah. Fine, and let's use the Gzeira Shava the other way around and say that, and say, well, first of all, actually, there'd be two things that we could learn from it then. One, we could say, there's two things so far that we said the Parah Adruma is more stringent than the Eglah Rufa. Number one, that a mum passes it, fine. Maybe let's say you can't learn that from oil, because mum has nothing to do with oil. But fine, we said also about a Parah Adruma, as soon as you put something on in its possible, by the Eglah Rufa, it actually has to move with it. So if you're learning oil in one direction, that by the Parah Adruma, any kind of work passes it, you should learn in the other direction also, and say that by the egg, but just like by the Parah Adruma, just standing there with it passes it, so by the Eglah Rufa. The answer is, okay, how miut rachman a buh? Fine, we have the miut buh. So that miut teaches us that we exclude the mum, that we exclude the concept of mum. From the Eglah Rufa. Okay, we're back to the question, the Eglah Nami Ksiv Ba. Fine, what about the Ba that it says the Eglah Rufa? The answer is, Ahum Ibaiva, the Mu'ti Kodshim, the Le'tosla Bu'avoida. Yes, but that actually, we're not using for the Eglah Rufa, we're actually using it for, it's called the Main Inyan Lozet, Sneu Inyan Lozet. We've had this before, that sometimes when you have something that's taught in one place and it's not really needed by that particular din, then instead we use it for a related din. We're using it to say that. Well, no, actually, here it's not that. No, here what we're saying is the miut by the Eglah Rufa, by it, that work passes it, we're using that as a miut not to say that doesn't apply to the Parah Adruma, but to say that doesn't apply to other kodshim. Namely, so we're changing the meaning of ba. No, so, well, now, we're still using ba as a miut, but the difference is, but instead of being a miut against the Parah Adruma, we're a miut against other kodshim. Why? Because if not for that, you would think to make kavachomer that other kodshim should be possible if work was done with them based on the Eglah Rufa. Just like the Eglah Rufa, where so far we've established that a mum does not passle it, avoid the paselosba, but doing work with it passles it. Kodshim should mum paselosba. So when it comes to kodshim, where mum passles them, in addition to avoid the paselosba, how much more so that doing work with them should passle them? That's why you need the word ba in the pasuk to tell us that now.
When do we find Ba for Kodshim?
We don't. That you find Ba by the Eglah Rufa. The Ba is telling us, because that's what we're saying. The Asher Lo Ubad Ba, that no work was done with it, because if work was done with it, it would be possible. Implying that there are other kinds of animals that are brought as opposed to Kodshim, where if work was done with them, they still remain kosher. Okay, the Gemara says you don't need that limud ikul mifrach, because you can slug up that kavachimer. Mala Eglah Shekhen Shonim Poisless Ba. We just said before, the Eglah Rufa has a limitation on the age. Once it gets past a certain age, it's possible. Kodshim don't have that. Ryan says back, Nu, Otu Kodshim Mileka the Pastor Bushanim. Very well. Don't you have some Kodshim that are indeed possible once they reach a certain age? For example, the Korban Pesach.
How could you learn it from the Shanim?
No, because the point is, once you find something, if you're trying to say Kavachayra, that you're trying to say that the Eglah Rufa has a leniency that a mum doesn't passle it. Therefore, you want to say the Kodshim, which have a stringency where a mum passles them, you would think then the same stringency that applies to the Eglah Rufa should apply to them. That works. I can show you, though, that on the other hand, the Eglah Rufa has a stringency of its own. Namely, that it's passled once it reaches a certain age. Kodshim don't. But you don't. So therefore, you could argue maybe on the contrary. An Eglah Rufa, which is more stringent, which has an age limitation, also has a work limitation. Kodshim, which don't have an age limitation, shouldn't have a work limitation either. You don't need the positive ba to teach us that they don't. Now, the fact of the matter is, by the way, the Gemara answers that. Otu Kodshim, you like it to pass the bush on him. Look, don't you have some kind of Kodshim where age does indeed pass for them? Rashi gives an example, a Korban Pesach and a Korban Chatas are supposed to be an animal within its first year. So yes, you have certain korbanos, which also there's a deadline for them. Therefore, therefore, you need the pasuk to teach us that even such kodshim, which have the same stringency as the Eglah Rufa, that they have a certain age limit, like the Korban Pesach. You would be able to use this Kavah Chomer, because whatever stringency applies to the Eglah Rufa also applies to them as far as age. The Eglah Rufa has a leniency that the mum does not passle it. Therefore, you would think, how much more so than that malacha should passle the Korban Pesach, let's say. And the chiddush is that not. That's why we have the word ba to teach us that not. The fact of the matter is, by the way, that kodshim do have an age limitation in the sense that the din is, you know, they bring an old animal as a korban. So there's a bit of discussion about that. First of all, maybe that's not their right. So so the technical definition of old for that purpose is when it's so old that it shakes when it stands. It doesn't have the strength to stand. So fine, but first of all, that's not a specific age. It's whatever, however, different animals will reach that stage at different ages. Also, the whole concept may only be d'rabbanan. Here we're talking about Raisa. So nu, v'kodshim v'le pasol v'hu avoy d'mahach. Now, the Gemara asks, what are you telling me that you learn this concept that kodshim are not pasol by having work done with them? You're telling me you're learning it from here, from the mir, from v'ah, that it says by the egla rufa? Mehasim nafka, we have a whole different place that we learn it from. Namely, the pasuk says, when it lists the fact, when it mentions the fact that you're not allowed to bring a bal mumah to kodshim, and it lists several mumin, averes, if the animal is blind, a shover, or if it has a broken limb, a chorutz, or if it has a notch in a limb, or an eyelid, or whatever, or yabeles, or have a wart, or gorov, or yalefes, or various kinds of skin, there's various kinds of skin conditions, loisakrivu eile l'Hashem. It said you should not bring these to Hashem, which the word eile, again, is a mirror. Eile yafamakru, you're not allowed to bring these, avalatamakru, kachim should never been avoided, but you're allowed to bring kachim, that work has been done with them. So you know from that, you don't need the pasuk bah over here by the Agla Rofa. The answer is it's just, nevertheless, we still need our pasuk here by the parandu, by the Agla Rofa. Because otherwise, if you only had that pasuk about the mumim and the word ela, you would think that only applies if the work that was done with it was work of heter. So, for example, you have an ox, let's say, that previously you've used for plowing or pulling a wagon or what have you, and now you decide to remakdish it. So, fine, the word ela teaches us that's not a problem. But you would think maybe if the avoda that was done with it is something that's osur, Rashi gives an example. Let's say you did work with it on Shabbos. Or let's say you did work with it as kalayim. You took this ox and put it together with a donkey and had them and hitched them up to a plow or a wagon or whatever and had them pull together. Yes, maybe you would think that it should become possible. Sricha, so therefore we need the word bo by Eglarus to tell us that even that not. Okay, fine, but even that, the fact that an avoda of Isur was done with it, you also know from the pasuk in connection with the mumim, because a couple of psukim later, after the list of mumim, the pasuk continues, "Umiyad ben necher from the hands of a goy lo yisakrivu es lechem alekeichem mikolayla." You're not allowed to bring the food of Hashem from any of these. Meaning that it was just like a Jew is not allowed to bring an animal the Baal Mum needs with a goy. You bring a goy's korban, a goy is allowed to be menadev an oyla, and then possibly shlomim as well. Yeah, that's the whole story. Yeah, we'll learn it in Gittin in a few months. Says Hashem. Yeah, but it can't be a Baal Mum. Which, by the way, the reason why the pasuk has to point that out, by the way, is because if a goy decides to bring a korban on his own outside the Beis Hamikdash, which he's allowed to do, he's allowed to do even nowadays, actually, we're not allowed to help him with it, but we're allowed to teach him the right thing to do, he can bring an animal which is a bal mum. He just can't bring an animal which is missing a limb altogether, like it's missing a hand or a foot or an eye or whatever, but a plain old mum, yeah, it can. For example, let's say one of them. For example, in that story in Gittin, what happened to the animal over there? They what about Kamsa do to it? Either he made a split in its lip or its eyelid. Two different versions of the Gemara. So if they were bringing that korban in honor of Hashem elsewhere in the world, it wouldn't be a problem. But for them to bring it to the Beis Hamikdash, it's also
even from a goy.
That's what the pasuk is saying. Miyad ben necher, even from a goy. Yeah. So again, Eila is a miyot. Eila yatamakri. You're not allowed to bring these that have a mum. Avalatamakri kachim should never be an avoda. But you're allowed to bring kachim which work has been done. So once we have two Eilas, one teaches us work of heter, one teaches us work of iser. What do I need a third pasuk? What do we need the ba by Eglar Bofa for? The answer is still itzrich. We still need it. Sakadai nachamin hanimi lehechad the other ben chen chulin. Fine, but you would still think that maybe whether the work was Isser or whether it was Heter, maybe it only does not pass all the carbon if the work was done while the animal was chulin. Avol avad ben chen kachim, meaning of the word. So let's say, for example, there are two possibilities, right? You have this ox was originally chulin. You were plowing with it, let's say, which is avodas Heter, or you hitched it up together with a donkey, which is avodas Isser. Now you have a third possibility. What if after you were makdish it, you worked with it, which is also to do, like avad b'chol sherecha. It's also to do. Never, and it was after it became kachim. At which point you're not supposed to work with it. Emo litzeru, so maybe if you did work with them when they were kachim, you would think maybe then they become osur. Tzucha, so therefore we have three limudim. In other words, one to teach us that if it was chulin and you did work, which is mutter. Two, if it was chulin and you did work, which is osur. And three, if it was kachim, which any work you do with it is an isur then.
Could you, if you learn something when it's mutter, could you, you need another tassel, 31 tassel?
Of course, because you might argue that, no, you know what, the Torah doesn't mind if this animal was used for work, which was a heter, but it would mind if, used, well, if it was used for work with an heter. Maybe that tassels it from being brought to the carbon. So, you know, and you could also argue, after it was made kosher already, after it was already declared a carbon, maybe at that point, if you work with it, you've taken away the, you've taken the kedusha off it. No, that's what we're saying. Kufa, getting back to what we said before, Amar Rihoda Amar Rav, Kiniachala Oidish or Sack and Psula, if you put on to the Torah Druma a bundle or a rope or whatever it is, a sack, a Psula, then it becomes possible of an Egla Abshin Timshech, but when it comes to Egla Rufa, it only becomes possible if it actually pulls with the load. Mason, the Gemara says we have a contradiction. And Braisa says, when the Pasuk says oil, when the Pasuk says by both by the Torah Druma, let's say, because that's what we're talking about, when it says the word oil, Ein Liela. Ein liela oil, we would only know from that that it means if it had a yolk and it had a yolk. Shara vodis minayin. How do we know the same thing applies if other kind of work was done with the potential paragrama? Amar to kavachomer. Well, you can figure it out from kavachomer. Uma egla shein mum poisaba shara vodis poisaba. Madach the egla rufa where a mum does not possible it, as we established before, and yet other kinds of work possible it, which we know that because the Torah specifically says asher lo ubadba. So the parah druma, where mum passels it, ain't a din shara vodis poslin, but how much more so that other kinds of work should passel it. And the bride's continues, v'im nafshach loymar, if you want to say that you want to find a way to slug up the kavachoma, which the Gemara will point out in a minute how we can do that, then I'll bring you a different source. Nema kan oil, nema lahalan oil, because by the parah druma it says oil, by the eglar rufa it says oil, ma lahalan shara vodis poslin, but so just like the eglar rufa, we said that other kinds of avoided passel it, because I shall say, well, but Afkan Sharavodis postless. So the same thing when it comes to the Faradum or other kinds of avoided pasulat. Now, we haven't yet finished, we haven't yet gotten to the point how we're trying to contradict Rabbi Yehuda. So far we just have this Kavachoma or Gzera Shava. First we're gonna deal with what does the Braisa think you could object to this Kavachoma such that it has to bring the Gzera Shava. Mayim Nafsha Flema. What does it mean if you should want to say? What objection can we bring to the Kavachoma? The answer is b'chitema, because you could say ikla mifra, because you could slug it up, as we said before. Mala egla shaken shanim poislisva. Consider the egla rufa has an age limitation. Right. The parah druma in principle does not.
Right.
Inami, or another possibility, kodshim ichichu, you can prove it instead from kodshim, from mum poislisva and vein avoida vasel espehen. That, we just established before, a mum possible kodshim work does not possible it. So therefore, that would destroy the whole kavachayim. You don't have a proof then that the same rules that apply to Egla Rufa apply to Kavachomer. Therefore, instead, we need a Gzeira Shava, Nevelachan Ova, Nevelachan Oil, Malachan Sharavodis, Afkan Sharavodis. Now comes the objection, now comes the contradiction to what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. When we mock him Shabasa, well then, in that case, if we're already learning a Gzeira Shava from the Egla Rufa to the Parah Druma, then we should learn everything that it says by one should apply to the other. So just like by the Egla Rufa, it only passes it if it actually pulls, because it says Hashem like Mosh Kavoil, same thing by the Parah Druma. Where do you get that? By the Parah Druma, it should be even if you just placed on it. That's the contradiction to Rabbi Yehuda.
It
brings into question what Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav is saying.
Right.
He's saying that the Parah Druma is more stringent in that as soon as you put the yoke on it, it becomes possible, but we see that by the parah druma, it has to move with it a certain amount, how much the Gemara will say in a minute. And shouldn't it be the same thing? If you're already learning other kinds of work by the parah druma, only possible it based on a zeta shava from the Egla Rufa, then the same rules should apply, only if it moves with this. Yeah.
It doesn't.
Yeah. The answer is tanoi. It's actually machlokas tanoi. Ika demaisi lama egla, ve ika demaisi lama gufa de parah. There are some tanoim who taka have to learn that other kinds of work possible the parah druma based on the gzeira shava from egla rufa, and according to them you could ask this question. The ika demaisi lama gufa de parah, but you have other tanoim who learn it from the actual statement by the parah druma itself. In which case, well, we'll see how. But the point is, then you can't say that because by the egla rufa it has to move to be possible, therefore by the parah druma it should also, because according to that second way of looking at it, you don't need the egla rufa at all to learn it. You learn it straight out from the psukim themselves about the parah druma.
And if the psukim don't say it, then you don't
know. And then if the psukim don't say anything about moshka, if they just say ashalot, ola, 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 it didn't come up, yeah. The tanya, as we learn in a braise, when the pasuk says oil, when it says by the parah druma that a yoke, ainly yellow oil, so we only know from that what it means if a yoke went up on it. Shara vodis minayin, how do we know the same thing applies if other kinds of work were done with it? No, because the pasuk says that there did not come up on it a yoke, which means Rashi says effectively what we do is we start by learning the pasuk, we ignore the word oil because it comes at the end. If the pasuk meant to say only an oil passes it and nothing else that was placed on it, then it would have been an oil would have been earlier. Asher le'ola oil aleha. The fact that it says asher le'ola aleha oil, so asher le'ola aleha means that nothing has come up on it, as well as oil. We have two things. Anything, nothing else has come on it, meaning any other kind of burden, like the oil shall sack in or whatever, as well as an oil has not come on it. Why do we need oil? We'll talk about it in a second. Well, that's it. In Cain, Matam, Adlema, oil. So then why does the pasuk need to continue with the word oil? The reason is, oil, postal, ben, b'shas, avoda, ben, shalom, b'shas, avoda, because the oil, an actual yoke will passel it, whether you're putting it on the animal at the time of work or not at the time of work.
Meaning,
in other words, no, not even standing still. No, in other words, when you could have a case, for example, you could have a time, for example, that you could have, let's say, for example, that you, okay, so what's the difference? So Rashi says b'shas avoda and shalom b'shas avoda means like this, that I was mentioning before about putting your jacket on it, but the difference is, are you putting your jacket on it because you want it to carry it, and then even if it hasn't carried you yet, it's possible, or is it it's a burden for you. Right now, you need someplace to put it down. You could have just as well put it down on a rock or something. That's b'shas avoda versus shalom b'shas avoda. A yoke passels it whether it's b'shas avoda or not. Even, let's say, for example, you're carrying a yoke, it's a heavy object, you need someplace to put it down. The minute you put it down on the animal, puzzle. Whether you're putting on the yoke for it to work, or whether you're just putting it on because you need to rest a minute.
That's from
the word oil, from the fact that the pasuk specifically mentions a yoke. Sharavoidus, whereas other kinds of work ain't process ever b'shas avoda. They only passel it when work is being done. So for example, again, you put on your jacket on it just because it's heavy and you need someplace to put it down a second, not a problem unless it starts walking with it. But if you put your jacket on it because you mean for it to start carrying it, then it's possible even before it starts walking.
As opposed to
an oil, regardless, no matter what reason you put it on there, it becomes possible.
So what do you draw from the fact that oil comes at the end of the passage rather than the middle of the passage?
That's because if it's said in the middle, it would only mean only an oil would passel it, nothing else. Like this, we're saying a jacket passels it, an odor shall sack it, passels it, anything, as long as you meant for it to actually transport it.
Right, and the fact that it's at the end of the pasuk, why does it have to say?
That's the thing, because if it was in the middle of the pasuk, it would mean asher. If it said asher le'ola oil aleha, it would mean only if a yoke went on it. But if a jacket or a bag or whatever went on it, it wouldn't be a problem. Asher le'ola, that means that nothing has gone on it for purposes of work, as well as an oil has not gone on it, whether for purposes of work or not. Okay, the Gemara asks, the Eima Asher Lo Ola Oleh Klal. Fine, if you're going to darish in the pasuk that way, then say that the words Asher Lo Ola Oleh, that nothing has gone on it, would be a klal, would be a generality. Oil prat, and the word oil would be a specification. And klal of prat and klal al mashal prat. We would apply the usual rule that when you have a klal of prat, and we only include the prat, oil ein midyachr in the light. There would only be an oil. We're back to the idea that it would be only an oil, nothing else. The answer is asher ribuyahu. Yes, but the word asher, the pasuk didn't have to say asher loy ola oil. The fact that it says asher is a ribuy. It comes to include other kinds of things that may have gone on it as well. So it's not a klal prat, in other words. So the ribuy means that it includes anything else as well. We're not even limiting it to things that are similar in any way to an oil. We're saying in general means anything asher lo ola ola. Yeah. B'tanya nami gabi egla kai gavna, and then you have a similar braisa that says similarly by the egla arufa. So the bottom line is where we got to is that we don't have a contradiction to the Yehuda Amarah because we don't have to learn from the Egla Rufa to the Parah, where then we can have the objection, how do you know that by the Egla Rufa that's a pull and by the Parah Adumah it doesn't? Because we have another Braisa that says that from the word Asher Lo Ola Aleha we learn that already the Parah Adumah is possible with anything else as well. That's what the Yehuda Amarah is basing himself on. We learned similar braisa when it comes to egla rufa. Again, the pasuk says by it oil, in the yellow oil, you'd only know that it means other kinds of work. Only a yoke. Shadav odis minayin. How do we know it includes other kinds of work as well? Tamadloy mashkele. Oh, but when we come back, the pasuk says that nothing, that no work has been done with it, meaning any kind of work. Incidentally, by the way, this is in Bava Metzia, the Gemara has a discussion about the fact that it says ubad, which means that no work was done, but it's written in the Torah without the vav, so that as if it can be read obad, that he did work. So what does it mean? Ubad is passive, meaning any kind of work was done. Ovad would mean he did work, meaning consciously. And therefore, the Gemara explains on that basis, it's not necessarily whether any work was done, it's whether any work was done that the person wanted to have done with purpose, or that they wanted to have done. An example that it gives over there in Bava Metzia is, let's say, for example, with the Egla Rufa, also the Paradigma for that matter, because we do learn them one from the other, is that, for example, if a bird lands on it and then sits there for a while, that doesn't make it possible. So there's no Ovad slash Ubad. You didn't intend for the bird to nest. As opposed to, for example, the Gemara continues there, Ola Olel Zohar, in the case of both the Paradigma and the Egla Rufa are female animals, if it was mounted for mating by a male, that possible. Even though you didn't bring the male there to mate with it, but nevertheless you benefit from it, and therefore that would make it possible. Okay. Anyway, continuing the braith over here, in Kain Matam Lema oil. So then, why does the pasuk mention a yoke? Same idea. Oil posel ben b'shas avoda ben shalav b'shas avoda. A yoke posels it whether it's for the purpose of work or not. Shal avoda same posel shalav b'shas avoda. Other kinds of work only posels it at the time of work. Again, the difference whether you're putting your Hey, again, the same question we could ask. The ema about the klal uprat. The ema asher lo uba got klal earl uprat. Klal uprat ema klal ol mashu uprat. Earl in mid afrin eloy. Again, the same question. Why do we say that the klal uprat limits it only to a yoke? And again, the answer is asher ribuya. Or again, here it also says there's an asher. Asher lo uba back to two. Asher lo uba got. Asher lo mashu uba oil. So from one or the other of those ashers, we can learn that any kind of thing would
pass. Klal uprat. The uprat comes only to mean that specific klal,
definitely. Right, and actually we learned in Nazir about all the mechanics of klal uprat and prat uprat and whatever. The idea is, normally, if you just had the prat by itself, right, you would say there could be other limudim. You could have zera shavas, you could have kalachimers or whatever, from which you could include other things. By the Torah mentioning a klal and then a prat, is specifically telling us, I know there could be a greater klal over here, but I'm excluding all of them and limiting it specifically to the prat. Don't use any of the other limudim to derive any other examples. Yeah. Asher comes to tell us, though, that there's a ribui that we're including everything. Okay, I'm going to go. What? Boy, me name Rav Yochanan. I asked Rav Yochanan the question, Meshichas Ol B'Kama. We're saying that with the Egla Rufa moves, walks, carrying a yoke or any other kind of burden, it becomes possible. How much does it have to move to be possible? On the lake in Loy Oil. So he tells him the size of the yoke. Next question, does that mean the length of the yoke, or does it mean the width, the thickness of it? Wait, remember though, the yoke is crosswise over the... No, if this is the animal over here, here's the animal's neck, you put the yoke across it. You could argue, it means the thickness of the yoke. Once it's moved, so that, you know...
So tiny.
Well, so fine, but you know, here's the yoke, for example, once the animal is moved. So that originally the yoke was above this spot on the ground, and now it's above this spot on the ground, and maybe that's enough. Well, so one of the Rabbanan named Rabbi Yaakov says, and Rabbi Yechanan personally explained to me that it means Meshichas Oil L'Rochboy Tepach. It does mean the width. It means the Tepach. So the width meaning the thickness of the oil. So in other words, exactly what I was just diagramming over here. A Tepach, yeah. So if you have, in other words, so the animal was standing so that the oil was over this spot. Now it moved a tefach, which is the full width of the oil, so no part of the oil is over the original spot of ground where it was before. That makes it possible. Okay, the lame of tefach, why not just say tefach? Why mention the width of the oil? The answer is, Hakamash Malon, she ordered an oil tefach. This incidentally tells you that the size of an oil is one tefach thick. L'may nachdimina, what's the practical distinction? L'may kachomemkar, it's useful to know as far as buying and selling. If you sell a yoke, or somebody is selling a yoke to you, whatever, the assumption is that it should be at least a tefach thick. And if not, then it's a mekach tov. It's a misleading sale. You're not selling something that
you see what you got.
Not necessarily. No. Nowadays, you have all kinds of things where people buy and sell things sight unseen. When you, yeah, but even nowadays, yeah, nowadays when you go buy something on eBay or Amazon or whatever, you don't see the actual object. But in those days also, you know, I had a yoke for sale. You don't have to schlep the yoke to the marketplace. You know, you'll pay me for it, and you'll pick it up next week or whatever, you know.
So, in other words, the merchant doesn't have to specify the weight.
We have to, in other words, but if it turns out that it's less than a tefach thick, then the buyer is entitled to his money back because of the mechatzos.
Unless they read.
Unless they read, obviously. Yeah. Okay. Amar Rav Yechon ben Shaul, a little bit of agadah. If nema amar Torah hobi egla banacha, why does the Torah tell us to take a calf and kill it in a valley? Let there come a creature that has never produced fruit, namely an egla, a calf, which is doing its first year, or if it went to the chum doing its first 2 years or whatever. It's never had children yet. The calves don't usually bear children that young. Okay, egla is female, so Pasha is female. But whatever, it hasn't yet had children, it hasn't yet had babies. The order for Mokum Shena is a Paris. It'll be decapitated in a place where it does not produce Paris, named Nachalais, on this hard ground that we discussed before, which is not suitable for cultivation, and which we'll learn on other days is not allowed to be cultivated. Let it be a kapara for somebody who they killed him and thus did not allow him to produce Paris, the victim. So the question is, my Paris, what kind of Paris are you talking about that he didn't manage to produce? You live a period of review. You're going to say that they prevented him from having children. After by that logic, so you're telling me, let's say, that if the body was of an old person who was no longer able to father children, or a Swiss who was never able to, would you say you don't bring him to Egla? Obviously not. Ella mitzvah. So no, what Paris do we mean? We mean the fact that he was prevented from doing further mitzvahs. That's the Paris, that he was prevented. Mitzvahs are like food. Any mitzvahs, whatever it is, whatever mitzvahs, he would have continued doing in his lifetime. Now he can't do anymore. A person is like a tree. Therefore, the mitzvahs are like fruit. And then whoever killed him prevented him from doing that. Mishnah continued to merudin oisel nachal eson, that they bring down the egla rufa to a nachal eson, and we said eson to mashmoy kosha. The word eson means exactly what it sounds like. It means hard, which we talked about yesterday, the Rashi versus the Rambam, where Rashi says that it means hard ground, and the Rambam says it means a fast-flowing stream. How do we know the word eson means hard? Shenema, the positive eson, meshavecha v'sim v'selakinecha. There's a Bilam is talking to the descendants of Yisroi. Your place where you live is Eson, and you place your nest in the rocks. So we see that Eson is associated with the idea of hard rocks. But Omer, and you have another passage. Shimu Horem Esriv Hashem. Listen, the Navi Micha says, listen, mountains, to the argument that Hashem wants to make. The Hoysonim Moste Eret and Eisonim, which are the foundations of the world. So again, we see that Eson is associated with the idea of like hard, strong mountains. The Rashi over there on the pasuk says that it's actually the Navi is actually addressing the Ovis, like, I have complaints, the Eidosh is saying, I have complaints against the way your children are behaving themselves, because the Ovis are compared to mountains. Acherim, and then Acherim, which is usually the mayor, says, Minayim la'esan shu yoshan. He says, no. How do we know? The word esan actually means old. Namely, in other words, what we mean old in this case, it would mean that it can't be dirt that was freshly brought here. It has to be the original dirt that was there from Sheshes Mevredeshes, yeah. Shenemah, you have a pasuk in Yirmiyah describing the Babylonians, the Kastim, who are going to invade Eretz Yisrael. Goy Esonhu, they are a powerful, they're the strong nation. Goy Me'olamhu, they are an ancient nation. So we see that Eson is associated with the idea of ancient. Rashi on the pasuk says, by the way, what do you mean by ancient? What do you mean the Babylonians are ancient? It means they have an ancient history already of rebelling against the Eretz. They're going all the way back to the Tower of Babel. Anyway, the point is that Eson is associated with the idea of old. Interesting idea that's brought up in one of the sichas of the Friedrich Rebbe, that the Eson actually has three meanings. Besides the two that we're saying over here, it has the alt, hart, stark, old, hard, and strong, based on these sukkim and based on other sources. So therefore, when you talk about the Eson and a Yid and the Shama, I talk about, for example, Tanya Osius Eson, that the Tanya helps develop and then strengthen the Eson and the essential pintle of Yid, the alte harte starkheit, the old hard strongness that we had, that with the old hard tough, alte harte stark, old hard and tough, the old hard toughness that we've inherited from our Rabbi Tzvi Yaakov. Mishnah said, that they decapitated using a cleaver from behind. My time, how do we know from behind? Because we learn by Xeda Shoga that here it says, that you do Malika, which is done from the back of the neck. The Kohen takes his thumbnail and then presses it into the back of the bird's neck. So therefore we see that Arifa means the back of the neck. The Mishnah said, the place where the Egla Arufa was killed is not allowed to be planted or to be worked. When we talked about yesterday, you had asked how much of the area, so we talked about the different possibilities. Turn it up on, and when the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says, you take down an Egla Arufa to a Nachal Eson, the Pasuk says, so what does that mean? There's no question. Ye'oved means to work, and Yizareh means to plant. But does it mean it's a place that has never been worked or planted, or does it mean a place which is not allowed to be worked or planted in the future? So, L'shalva, Divrei Rabbi Yoshiya. Rabbi Yoshiya says it means in the past. It has to be a place that never was worked. Rabbi Yonasan says no, it means for the future. It's an issue. You're never allowed to plant that area, which is why we talked about yesterday about what Rabbi Shimon about Sefer Chrysos asked the question how you can work anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, and then the different answers that have been offered. So, Rabbi Amar, Labba de Kol Amalei Pligi. Actually, Rabbi Yoshiya and Rabbi Yonasan are not arguing that the word that you're not allowed to plant it in the future. Because the passage does say it shall not be planted. But if even Yoshi would have to agree that not only that, so that means for the future you're never allowed to plant this area. The only machlokas is what about the past? Rabbi Yoshi figures miksiv v'lo yubad. Does the pasuk say it shall not be worked? It doesn't. It said v'lo yeoved. So therefore we can understand that it means in the past. Whereas Rabbi Yonasan says, on the contrary, if it said ne'ebad, would definitely mean the past. Ye'obed should mean for the future. Actually, between Hagoyes Habach and Marshon and whatever, there seem to be two different Girsois over here. In the Gemara, there's all Girsa, and there's Yalp Shimoni's Girsa, and there's two different Girsois also. And actually, what the exact argument is back and forth between Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yoshiya. So, for Rabbi Yonasan, asher l'sha'ova mashma. So Rabbi Yoshiya answers, yes, but the word asher implies that it's something that was in the past, asher lo ye'ovid, which was not worked. Whereas Rabbi Yonasan says that the word asher is a ribuy, which, as we're going to say soon, that it means not only planting, but any other kind of work involving the ground is also. So therefore, the word asher teaches us that. Not that it's what happened in the past, but that in the future, you now have to do any kind of work.
Asher includes different things.
Includes different things besides for the actual Yizoreya, yeah. The Mefarshim brings, the Tosfos Yom Tov brings that actually the halacha, according to Rabbi Yoshiya, you would be allowed to work there. So everybody asks him, how does he understand our Gemara over here? And among the answers they give is that when Rava is saying that they both agree that in the future it's also to work there, doesn't mean that the stum of the Gemara, doesn't mean that the compilers of Shach had to agree with Rava on that. The stum of the Gemara, the Chachamim of the Gemara may have understood that no, Rav Yoshiya is saying specifically it means it cannot have been worked in the past, but it can be worked in the future. And Rabbi Yonasan is saying the other way around. So fine, the halacha could be, no, not necessarily the halacha, but whatever, you could at least, Rabbi Yoshiya could be saying then that not in the future. Other Mefarshim talk about maybe there would be a distinction, even Rabbi Yoshiya maybe would say, since he doesn't use the word asher, to learn other kinds of work, maybe he would say, you're not allowed to plant there, granted, but you're allowed to do other kinds of work, other kinds of field work there.
So it's there, yeah.
Okay, the Mishnah said, Mutal Lutzuk Shab Kishtan al-Nakasham al-Banim, one of you are allowed to comb flax or carve stones over there. Yesterday I had a bit of a hard time explaining what the Nakra Shamavana means, but that's what it means. It means to carve stones into shape. The Nakra doesn't mean to peck at them, because that's how they did it in those days. Stone tools, peck, and they have the right shape there. So why do...
From the local stones? Or?
No, in other words, so you can't dig out stones from the ground over there. That's one of the laws that you're not allowed to do. But you can bring stones from someplace else and use that as an area to carve them in. Turn up on them. We learn the price. When the pasuk says "Asher lo yoved bo v'lo yizareah," when it says that work should not be done there and it should not be planted, again according to Rabbi Yonasan, then it means in the future. It according to Rava, according to everybody, yeah. Ainly elazriyah. So you would only know from that it means you're not allowed to plant there. Shara bodis minayin. How do we know it includes other kinds of work with the ground? Tamalim asher lo yoved bo mikom makom. Imken ma tamalim v'lo yizareah. So why does the pasuk? specifically mentioned planting. Loy malach, because here you have a klal u'pra, basically. Loy malach, it teaches you mazriyam yuchedet shiva gufa shokaka, not really a klal u'pra, because then it would only be the pra, but we're using asher yizareya as we're using it, it's sort of like a klal u'pra to klal, sort of. Mazriya miyuchedet shiva gufa shokaka, just like zriya is something special that it takes place with the actual ground itself, af kol shiva gufa shokaka. So the same thing, only what kind of avoda is also something that involves the actual ground. Yotza srikas pishtan nikravonim, as opposed to combing flax or carving stones, she'enim gufa shokaka, which are not, which do not take place with the actual, you're not using the actual ground itself for cultivation.
So zriya includes everything that uses the ground.
Yeah.
Actually,
digging, or yeah, the Rambam phrases it, but it's basically the same malachos that are also on Shabbos involving the ground are the ones that are also here. Okay, the question is, why don't we say that you just have, you have a klal of prat, the word asher lo yo'ovid by the klal, lo yizareh has a prat, klal of prat, or prat, ein b'klal ala mashal prat, so therefore you would say again that it only would mean zriya and nothing else. And the answer is, and again, the answer is, like we had on Amar Aleph, asher dibuyo. Again, the word asher comes as a ribuy to include everything. But it has to be something that at least in some way is similar to Zriya. And that is anything that involves the actual ground itself. Yeah. Okay. Mishnah continued, Zikne in Rechtin Yidein Cholo, that the elders of the city wash their hands over the calf, and they say, Yodeinu lo shafu as adam hazeh, our hands did not spill this blood, ve'einenu lo ro, and our eyes did not see.
It's a neder?
No, it's not a neder, it's a statement of like absolving themselves of any guilt. Yodeinu lo shafu as adam hazeh, our hands did not spill this blood, ve'einenu lo ro, our eyes did not see. So we learned in the Mishnah, the Mishnah said, what would you think the Zikne based in are the ones who actually killed him? So it means we learned in the Mishnah what it means, that we didn't abandon him. And here the Braita is going to explain it in more detail. Tana Rabbanan, v'chol Zikne ha'ir ha'kriv melechol, the Pasuk says that all the Zikneim of that city that are close, the city that's closest to the corpse, yuchatir sidayim ala egla, haruf ha'banochal, should wash their hands over the egla that was decapitated in the valley. Now, she'ein tamadlema ha'arufa. Now the Pasuk does not have to say the word ha'arufa. At that point, already the Pasuk says it's been killed. So, yeah. Umar tamad by maharufa. So, what does the word harufa add? It means al-mokum arifasa shal egla. They have to wash their hands right over the place where the egla is killed. Right over the carcass. On the carcass of it, I guess, yeah. Which, by the way, some of the Farshim point out, this is maybe where the Rambam gets the idea that Nahal Esa means a fast flowing river. But otherwise, who says there's water there necessarily? If we're saying they have to wash their hands, then yeah. And the Omru, and they could say, Yodeinu l'shofu asadam hazeh v'einenu l'ro, our hands did not spill this blood, our eyes did not see. So the same question as the Mishnah of Chiyal Debenu also shabesin shayfin damin, what would we have thought that the basin were murderers? Ella, what they mean is, lo bob l'yodeinu p'tanu b'lo mizonis, he did not come to our hands, into our notice, in other words, and we let him go without food, because as Rashi said in the Mishnah, if he had had to go without food, he might have ended up having to rob somebody and gotten killed in the
slot.
Beis Din is responsible to make sure that when there are people coming to the city and leaving, that they are sent away with food. Technically, Beis Din
bringing food to people.
Not necessarily the Beis Din themselves, but they have to arrange in the city. They have to arrange in the city that they have to arrange in the city that there are, if there are people coming to town and they're leaving. And the truth is, there is a bit of discussion. Well, there's a bit of discussion as far as Levia, which is the next thing the Gemara is going to be talking about escorting travelers to the extent that applies nowadays. As far as food, I mean, also, it's more common nowadays for people bring along their own food. There's more places available to get. So maybe it's not as critical nowadays, you know. I will tell you, though, actually, there's a Medrash that mentioned after, you know, we had today. Today was Shabbos Rosh Chodesh and also Mocha Chodesh, so we read the first and last Sukkim of the Haftarah of Mocha Chodesh, the whole story of Yonasan and David over there. What happens at the end? The next Perek in Shmuel Beis, Shmuel Aleph, rather, sorry, David is starving. He comes to Noiv Irakonim, and he asks the Kohen Gadol for food, and all there is Lechem Apanim. And the Kohen Gadol gives him food, he gives him a sword, Doeg is there, and then things develop from there that eventually Doeg goes and tells Shaul what happened, and then Shaul orders the whole city to be massacred.
Where is that?
It's in Shmuel Aleph.
No, which town?
No. It's a few miles north of Jerusalem. Nowadays I think it's in greater Jerusalem, I don't know, whatever, anyway. So the Medrash says, what's the connection? With all that Yonasan was looking out for David, protecting him from Shaul, hiding him out, telling him to hide out there, I'll bring you a secret message, and etc. When he sent him away, they're swearing to each other eternal friendship and whatever, one thing Yonasan forgot is to provide David with food. If he'd remembered to provide him with food, then David, this whole thing wouldn't have happened. David wouldn't have been starving. He wouldn't have had to go to Noiv and then ask the Kohen Gadol for food. Doeg wouldn't have had anything to master, etc. So in a way, it all traces back to the fact that Jonathan forgot to provide him food. So we see the importance of providing travelers with food. Okay. And also the basis in the saying, we didn't see him and then let him go without an escort. And now the Gemara is going to go on to a bit of discussion about the importance of the mitzvah of escorting a visitor. Tanya, we learn about it. We force people to do the mitzvah of levia, to do this mitzvah of escorting travelers. And actually, the Rambam says that Beis Din is responsible for arranging people in town to escort travelers. And we'll talk about in the Gemara a bit how much you escort. The minimum is 4 amas. The minimum is 4 amas, and actually, the Marshal says, what's the good of escorting them 4 amas? The good of it is, at least, it shows that you're looking out for them. It shows that you want them to be safe. Once you want them to be safe, then already referring your Rav Yasser, the Eivishter takes that in mind and makes it, the Eivishter doesn't want that person to come to harm because you want him to be safe. If you don't even bother escorting them 4 amas, it shows that you don't care, so yeah. But the poskim do talk about why it is that nowadays we don't have the concept of levia so much. And there's a few different reasons they give. And the difference between inside the city and outside of it. In general, people don't travel alone. They usually travel in groups anyhow, so they're all a levia to each other. There's also the idea nowadays, or even a couple hundred years ago, there are decent road signs. People know where they're going. You don't need so much to show them the way as you did in olden times.
But I know some people who always escort.
You always escort a guest outside your door at least 4 amas. Yes, that's the 4 amas that Marshal is talking about. But the idea that Gemara is talking about over here to escort them and show them the way and whatever, that's not as much. There's a different explanation also. Some of the Mephoshim talk about that on the contrary. In their times, roads were very dangerous. You can't expect the person to go into a dangerous place himself in order to escort a traveler. Okay, so whatever, for all these various reasons. Yeah. Anyway. Because in fact, the schar of escorting a person and showing them the right way, there's no limit to it. How do we see that? From a story in Sefer Shoftim. Shenema, the Pasuk says, the Pasuk describes over there at the beginning of Sefer Shoftim how the various Shvatim are trying to finish conquering their territories. They've done a lot of it during the times of Yeshua, but after he died, there's still areas left to conquer. So it mentions that Bnei Yosef, the Shvatim of Manasseh and Ephraim, are going and trying to get rid of the remaining enclaves of Canaan in their area. The Pasuk says they came to a city called Luz. This is Bepashas, the same Luz. Bepashas is the same Luz where Yaakov had slept the night, etc. Yeah. Someplace in Eretz Yisrael. No, not necessarily. Shevet Yosef was in the center of Eretz Yisrael, like the area of Shechem, and the whole center of Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. Anyway. So the Pasuk says they came to the city of Luz and they couldn't figure out how to attack it. Actually, Mephoshim say, based on a Medrash, the word Luz actually is actually a kind of tree. Like we find by Yaakov, Yaakov Maka lived near Lach, the Luz behind. So a Luz is a kind of tree, an almond tree or something, whatever. This kind of tree grew in front of the entrance. There was only one entrance in and out of the city, and there was this tree growing in front of it. People would get in and out of the city through a hole in the trunk. Therefore, Bnei Yosef, the Shevet Yosef, couldn't figure out how to storm the city. So the Pasuk says, "Vayiru Hashem Ish Yotzim Neir." The watchmen, the guards who are preparing to besiege the city or whatever, saw a person leaving the city. Vayomru Loi Harenu Nos Mavoyahir. They tell him, "Please show us the way into the city." Va'osinu Imach Chesed, and we will do Chesed with you. Uchtim, and the Pasuk continues, "Vayaremus Mavoyahir." He showed them the way into the city, and sure enough, they were able to conquer it. So what chesed did they do with him? The rest of that city they killed by the sword because there's a chayah called the shama. They sent away that person and his family. And actually, Mephoshim says, the point of asking, what chesed did we do with him? The Pasuk says that they sent him away. The point is, not even like Rachav, it says they only saved her and her immediate family. Here, they saved even his more distant family. Anybody who wants to go with him can go safely. What happened? The person went to the land of the Chittim, the Pashtos in Turkey or Syria or whatever. He built the city. The famous Chittite Empire, which they discovered, the archaeologists discovered in the last 100 years or so, archives and all kinds of interesting things from them, was mostly based in Turkey. But they extended it to Syria, they extended it to parts of Eretz Yisrael, also Bnei Chais, for example, were in Hebron, they're the ones that Avraham bought Masa Machel. So he went to the land of the Chittim. Vayivan here, he built the city. Vayikra Shmo Luz, and he named it Luz after his old hometown. Hishma Adayimazeh. That is the name of its city. That is the name of that city until this day. So Tanya, we learn a brisa. He Luz Shatsovin Bachelas. This is the famous Luz where they died Chelas. Apparently it was a good place for dying Chelas. He Luz Shabakan Cheder Vladgobala. This is the city of Luz that when Sancheder came along, he didn't mix it up. He didn't exile all of its inhabitants, as he usually did to all the places he conquered. Nebuchadnezzar Vallechrib, when Nebuchadnezzar came along and didn't destroy it, unlike all the other cities that he conquered. And why? Also because some of the first talk about, because he built this new city the same way as his old city, with a tree in front of the only entrance in and out of the city. So Sancheder and Nebuchadnezzar couldn't figure out the way in.
Wait, but there's a tree in front of what?
In front of there, there's one entrance in and out of the city, and there's a big tree in front of it where people sneak in and out through the trees. So therefore, for generations, afterwards, this is Nebuchadnezzar, 1,000 years almost after they conquered Eretz Yisrael, and the city is still safe from them. So Af Malchamavus Ein L'Rishus Malchabar, even the Malchamavus does not have permission to go through the city. Ella, so what happens? How do people, don't people live there forever? Zekanim Shabbat, the old people in the city, with Manshadayim and Kotzalein, when they're sick of life, Yotz and Chutz L'Chaimer, they leave outside the wall. They hate Mason, and then they die. Now, the Gemara in Pesukah, by the way, tells us how at one point Shlomo HaMelech tried to send two of his scribes there. He had one day he sees the Malach HaMavis being very upset. Yeah, what's the matter? I'm supposed to be taking the lives of your two top scribes, Elichoda and Achia. Their names are. I can't do it. What am I supposed to do?
No.
These scribes are with Shlomo, and you're flying.
Right.
The Malach HaMavis is all concerned. I'm supposed to be getting them, and I can't get them. I don't know what to do. The Shlomo figures, okay, you know what? He doesn't say why, but Shlomo figures, you know what? Fine, they'll be safe in Luz. So he sends them off to Luz. Just before they get to the city, the Malach HaMavis gets him. And then he comes back all laughing. He says, you know what? You sent him into exactly where I needed. It was Min HaShemayim that I should, oh, that I'm only a laugh. Why couldn't I get them here in Yerushalayim? It was Min HaShemayim that I can only get them over there. That you unwittingly played it in my hand by sending them over there. And therefore Shlomo said that, you know what, Ragli de Inishin and Araven Beda, the person's feet, are his Araven, his person's feet, send him to where the Avishta wants him to be. Yeah. Anyway. So,
on the way to the...
On the way, yeah. Just that side, yeah. So, Ba'alei Dvorim Kavachayma. So now let's make a Kavachayma. Umak Knani Zeshla Dibu Bafir V'leholach Baraglav. This Knani, he didn't speak anything, he didn't walk with his feet. So the post just says Vayare, the post just says he showed them, which doesn't imply that he actually go anyplace or speak anything. And yet, he caused salvation, he caused a rescue for himself and his generations and his descendants to the end of time, because Luz is safe for thousands of years afterwards. Misha Oysa Levia Verdaglav, so somebody who escorts a traveler and shows him the right way by actually walking with his feet, Allah has come, how much more so that he gets an endless reward? That's what we were saying before, that's what Rameir started saying in the Braitha, that the reward for Levia is endless.
Just 4 hours.
Well, 4 hours is the minimum, but we'll talk about that. Okay. Lahem, how did this person from Luz show the Bnei Yosef the way into the city? He curled his mouth. Like he didn't even speak, because the Pasuk didn't say he spoke anything. He just like did like this or whatever, and then they realized, hey, you know, there's something funny about that tree or whatever. Rabbi Yechon, I'm a best boy, Harold. Rabbi Yechon says he pointed with his finger. Can you ever say that Rabbi Yechon? We learn a bright like on Rabbi Yechon. It says, "Veshrusha Knani is a hair of best boy," because this Knani pointed with his finger. God of Matzah, the loyal Sarah, said, "Father, he caused that he and his descendants for all time are rescued." Further on, Levia, I'm going to be sure that maybe
the entrance to the town was hidden by the tree.
Was hidden by the tree, yeah.
So they didn't know where.
So they didn't know until this guy either did it with his lip or his finger or whatever, yeah. A person is going on the road and doesn't have anybody to accompany him. Let him learn Torah, and that'll be his escort. As the Pasuk says, they will be a livia of grace for your head. The simple meaning of livia is like a wreath. But we're understanding of the lashon livia of accompaniment. And a necklace for your neck. So the Torah is like you, livia. Because of the four steps that Pare escorted Abraham when he left Mitzrayim, Shenema, the Pasuk says, Eitzavah l'Pare Anoshim, whatever. The Pasuk says that Pare ordered people to escort by Shalfoy, so they escorted Abraham. Because of that, Nishtab b'vanam avamei estrano, therefore Pare ended up enslaving the Jewish people as his, so to speak, his reward, Shenema v'avodim b'inu eitzim avamei estrano. His reward, basically, for that was that he got some emotion talk about it. I mean, the fact that the Jewish people are going to be enslaved for 400 years, that has nothing to do with Pare. But one explanation is, if it hadn't been for Pare escorting Avraham or sending the soldiers, whatever, to escort him, the Jewish people would have been enslaved, but not necessarily in Pare's land, as many other lands in the world. The fact that it was Davke and Mitzrayim was because of this. Pare sort of got the privilege, kind of, because of that. And then there's an interesting thing. One of the Mefarshim says, if you look at the order of what happened in the Pesukim, Pare escorts Avraham. Therefore, what are we saying? When a person is escorted, they're safe on the road. Otherwise, for example, bandits might have attacked Avraham and stolen everything he has. The fact that they escorted him, kept all of his wealth intact, that, therefore, later on kept, in the next parak in Parshas Lech Lecha, you have the friction between Loit and Avraham, which eventually developed into Loit having to leave. And then Avraham saying, after the war with the four kings, Hashem alekim matitim li, v'anehi her lecharriri, I'm barren, what kind of children are I going to have? And leading to Bamo Edaki Roshenu, how do I know that I'm going to inherit Eretz Yisrael? And therefore the Eved telling him, yeah, you'll know that you should know that your descendant will be enslaved for 400 years. Meaning, had it happened, had Pare not escorted him, then Avraham might well have lost all his wealth, or a significant chunk of it. Loit would have, there never would have been the friction with Loit. Loit would have stayed with him. Later on, Avraham wouldn't have had to be wondering who's going to be my heir. He would have figured Loit will be my heir. But the whole Bris Ben Absurdim sort of develops as an outgrowth of Pare having... Omer v'hod Omer, I've called him Alavis Chabera Abba Amos, but here ain't a nizik. Anybody who escorts his friend, even four Amos in the city, that friend will not be harmed. For the reason that Maharsha said, because that shows that you're looking out for him, and therefore the Eved looks at you as chosin for that. And the Gemara gives an example. Ravina Alviyeh L'Rava by Yitzchok Dalad Amos Be'ir. One time Ravina escorted Rava by Yitzchok four Amos in the city. Matal Yadah Hazeta. Later on, Rava by Yitzchok was in danger. The Itzel, and he was saved because of the Leviyah. A rav has to escort a talmid until the adi bura shalir, until the ibur of the city, meaning 70 amos outside the city. Chaver lechaver ad tchum shabbos. A chaver, meaning a talmid chacham, should escort another chaver ad tchum shabbos. Talmid lerav ainly. Again, nowadays people are mostly on their covets, and for all the other reasons. Yeah. Talmud the Rav ain't like Shir. A Talmud escorting the Rav, there's no Shir. What does that mean, there's no Shir? Either it means that there's no Shir, as in there's no limit to any amount. I mean, any amount that he escorts him, he's getting more and more of a tchar. So the Kama, then the question is, fine, what's the minimum that he should escort him? Or what's the minimum? Or, yeah, what's the absolute least? I'm going to change it to ad parsa. A parsa. The minimum is parsa. This is for his Rav. And this is only for a rabbi who's not your primary teacher. But your primary teacher, which is what I elsewhere explained, that you learn most of the chokhmah from him, it's three parts, yeah. Okay. No, I'm not here, come on. People are both on my company. Okay, the Gemara gives an example. Rav Kahana escorted Rav Shimi Ba'ashi from Pumnara until a place in Babel, Beit Sinisa, a place where there were a lot of palm trees growing. How far it was, we don't know, but whatever, it was a parasha, three parashas, whatever. When they got there, Omalei, so Rav Kahana asked Rav Shimi, Vade Dam Risu, is it true what you say, Hanit Sinyasa de Babel, Mishne Adam Rishon? It's new, that these palm trees here in Babel are here since the times of Adam Rishon. Can you say palm trees? Amalei, so he tells him, it kauta milta de amar Rav Yosi b'Chanina. You should know, actually, you've reminded me by asking that question of something that Rav Yosi b'Chanina said. He says, my dichtiv be'eretz le'ovah ba'ish v'l'yoshav adam sham, the passage describing the desert that the Jewish people traveled through in the 40 years, it says, a land where no man passed, and no where no person passed, and no man lived there. So, of course, if nobody even passed through, of course nobody settled there. What does the Pasuk need to mention it? Ella, what it means is, it, Adam over here does not mean mankind in general, it means Adam Arishin. Eretz should gozer ala Adam Arishin l'yishuv nityashva. A land that Adam Arishin had decided should be settled, became settled. Eretz shalai gozer ala Adam Arishin l'y nityashva. A land that Adam Arishin did not decide should be settled is not settled. In other words, Adam Arishin decided for each place in the world what should be over there. So therefore, when you're saying that these palm trees go back to the time of Adam Arishin, they don't. But the fact that this is a place where palm trees grow, that goes back to the time of Adam Arishin. These actual trees themselves are much younger. But the fact that this is a place of a huge area of palm trees, that is because Adam Arishin decided in his time that this should be a place of palm trees.
So what did you walked over to all the earth.
I guess that's the idea, yeah.
And everywhere he had a...
And everywhere he decided, yeah. Yeah. The Maharal talks about that it's meant more metaphorically, that since the Gemara mentioned in Sanhedrin that the dust to create other Marishim was taken from all over the world, so like each place in the world has a certain, connects to other Marishim in a certain way, like the, it formed a certain part of his body, and therefore based on that, again. Another example, Rav Mordechai Alvi L'Rav Ashi Mehagruni V'ad Beitipi V'amil Ad Beitur. Rav Mordechai, who was a Talmud of Rav Ashi, one time escorted Rav Ashi from Hagrunya till Beitipi, or some say until Beitur. Either way, it's a considerable distance. Amr Rav Yechin Mishum Remeir, Kol She'enim Milave U'mitzlave Ki'ilu Sheikach Damim. Anybody who does not do Levriya, and is not, anybody who does not escort, and is escorted, is like he's spilling blood. Now, what does that mean? So, Marsha says it means that even if the person has another escort, umislava, nevertheless, somebody should be escorting him, even if he has other people. Ben Yoyoda explains that, no, what it means is, the milava means that he doesn't want to do levia. The mislava means that, let's say, people want to escort him, and he says, don't bother. How is he sheikh of damim? She'omole livuhu anchi yericha le'elisha le'gira dubum l'tinoikis. Had the people of Yericha escorted Elisha out of the city, he would not have ended up getting bears to attack children. So what happened? The Pasuk describes in Melachim Beis, after Elisha became the new top Navi, after Eliyahu went up to Shemayim, shortly after that, he comes to the city of Yericha. The people tell him, you know, this is a nice place to live, but we have a problem over here. The water causes diseases. The water of the local spring causes diseases, and it causes people to miss, causes women to miscarry, etc. So Elisha has them take them to the spring over there. He takes some salt and puts it into the spring, and he says, Elisha. This is the first of his, the Pasuk says that altogether, Rashi explains, that altogether during his lifetime, Elisha did 16 nissim. Eliyahu did 8. Elisha had asked for a double portion of your spirit of Nevuah, so he ended up doing 16. This is the first one, or actually this is the second one of them, that the people of Yericha are telling him the water was no good. He takes some salt, puts it into the water, and usually salt makes the water worse. Here, it's Alberach, like Moshe putting the bitter wood into the water over there, Ramara. And he said, from now on, this water will be sweet. It won't cause any diseases anymore. Okay. And sure enough, that's what happened, and that spring is still there, Adayim Azeh. Next, the Pasuk says, he was leaving Yericha. As he's leaving, it says, Na'arim Ketanim, which the Gemara will discuss soon who these Na'arim Ketanim are. Literally, Na'arim Ketanim means small children, but we'll talk about what it means. Start running after him and making fun of him. Alei Kereach, Alei Kereach. Literally means go up, baldy, go up, baldy. So the simple meaning it would be that he was bald, but the Gemara is going to again explain another meaning of it. He turns around, he sees them, so the Pasuk says, Vayirem, he sees them, Vayikalalem B'Shem Hashem, he cursed them in the Eivishter's name, and bears came out of the forest and killed 42 of them. So the Gemara is going to be analyzing the story a little bit.
When
he's leaving Yericha. So what we're saying over here to start with is, had the people of Yericha escorted him, this whole thing wouldn't have happened. The children wouldn't be children, or young men, or whatever that we're going to talk about, wouldn't have started harassing him like that. And the people would have told them to leave him alone, and the bears would have been afraid to attack. So, Shanem, I was the process of a Yal Misham Beisel. It says he went up from there to Beisel, but who Ola Baderech, and he was going up on the road, which means Marsha says only he. You see, there's nobody else with him. Unarim Ketanim Yotzim in the ear, little children came out of the city, by Iskalsubai, they made fun of him, by Yom Yolomi, and they said to him, Alei Kereach, Alei Kereach. So what do they mean by that? Amrullah, they're saying, Alei, get out of here, she krachta aleinu es hamakim. You've made the place bold for us. Meaning, in other words, until now, the water of Yericha was bad. Therefore, nobody could drink it. How would people, you need water to drink, people would have to bring in water from other places, and they'd make nice money charging the people for water. These people were doing that. Now that Elisha healed the water, now they lost their parnassah, so therefore they're angry at him for that. Okay, Mayun Orim Ketanim. So why are we calling them small children? The problem is like this. Orim literally means young men, and now usually means above bar mitzvah. Ketanim means little children. So what is it? Are they Orim or are they Ketanim? And if you say Orim usually means after bar mitzvah. Okay, Orim Marshall points out that Orim can also mean servants, but there's no servants over here. There's no reason to assume it means that. And also, a simple meaning can't be tanim young children, because, well, how are you talking? You're punishing young children. They don't know what they're doing. So, Amar Abulaza, they're called Orim Shemenu Orim Mina Mitzvah, because they're shaken out of mitzvah. They're empty, in other words, of mitzvah. the Orim Melina. Ktanim, and they're called Ktanim Shoyim Ktanim Amona, because they had a small amount of Amunah. Because what do you mean you're worried that now you're not going to have Parnassah because the war has been healed? The Eberstein has a great world out there. He has other ways of providing you Parnassah, yeah. Tana, we learn in a Braisa, another explanation, Na'orim Hoyu, they were indeed Na'orim, they were young men, who bizbizu asman ktanim, but they acted in a demeaning way like children. In the fact that they made fun of him, some of the Farshim say also they exposed themselves like little children do, whatever. Maska sort of is, if it's Masha Makoma. Why? Maybe they're called Na'orim because they came from a place called, they're named after the place they came from. Me like Siv, just like you have another pasuk in the Lachim, but Aram Yosef Gudim, it says that Aram one time had gone out as bands to invade Eretz Yisrael. By Yishbum Eretz Yisrael Nara Ktana, and they captured from Eretz Yisrael a small Nara, the Kashalon, and we have the same question. Nara Ktana, what was she? A Nara above Bat Mitzvah, or a Ktana below Bat Mitzvah? Of Amr Abdos, Ktana, the mean Ne'uran. I mean, she was a Ktana, she was a young, she was a little girl from Ne'uran, from the name, from a city called Ne'uran. A Nara means a person from Ne'uran. So the same thing over here, Ne'orim Ktanim, maybe it means small children from Ne'uran. The answer is Hossam Lemifarish Makoma, because there is a difference is by that girl, who was taken captive and wound up as a servant in Naaman's house, and she's the one who advised him to go to Elisha to have his Tzaras healed. There it doesn't say what city she came from. Hossam Lemifarish Makoma, and here the Pasuk says that they came from Yericho. Therefore, they said they came out of the city, so we should assume they lived in Yericho, not in Ne'uran. Therefore, we have to assume that the word Na'orim has a different meaning. Okay, Pasuk continues, by Yifan Achra, by Yudim, by Kalim, Hashem, Hashem. It says he turned around and saw them and cursed them in the name of Hashem. Ma Ra'a. So what did he see? What did he see? The Pasuk makes a point of mentioning that he saw them. What did he see? Amarab Ra'a Mamash. It means literally he saw. Just his looking at them had an effect on him. As we learn in Hebrew, it was Shimon Gamliel. Remember, Kol Mokam Shenos the Chachamim Enayim. Whenever the Chachamim put their eyes on something in an angry way, I misa, I only. Either it causes death or poverty. We have, for example, Rav Shimon Ben Yochai, a story in Shabbos over there, where there's a person who's being chutzpahdikim and mustn't ain't a brave and asked also a gal shalatzomis. He looks at him, and he turns into a pile of bones. There's stories of Rav Sheshis and Brachos, a number of stories like that throughout Shas, where the Chachamim looked at somebody and then caused them to die. Also, actually, with Rashbi and his son Rav Elazar, we have when they came out of the cave and they couldn't understand how people are working for a living, how come they're not learning Torah all day, and everything. They look at burst into flames and they have to go back to the cave for a year. Yeah, I said, okay. Ushmul Amar, Ra'a Shekulim Misabra Ba'an Iman B'yema Kippurim. He saw that all of these people, their mothers had become pregnant with Amanim Kippur when Tashmish is also. So it was like they come from a bad source in the first place. The Maharal has an interesting explanation about this. He says, basically, since Tashmish is also on Yom Kippur, meaning nobody is supposed to be no Jewish children are conceived on Yom Kippur, therefore saying that they were conceived on Yom Kippur is the equivalent of saying, like, they don't really exist. They don't really have, and they exist. They're physical people, but they were Jewish children. But he says, in other words, what the Gemara is meaning to say by saying the Sabbath by name of Yom Kippur is another way of saying, like, they didn't deserve to exist at all. Like, even their whole existence is based on a nothingness. An interesting thing I saw based on the Rechaim HaKadosh talks about at the beginning of Parashat B'chukosai, the idea that you have to learn Torah in order to know what to do in order to observe, like it says in Pekei Avos, why Amar Oretz Chassid, an Amar Oretz can't be a Chassid and go look in the Mishnah Zin, and why does he have to know the basic halachas first? And he mentioned, but for example, there was a person who thought, you know what, relations between husband and wife are supposed to be a very holy thing, so what's a more appropriate time for it than Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the year? Not realizing that it's black and white halacha that you're not allowed to. So based on that, it could be that that's what happened over here. These children's parents were Amorasim, who, why did they end up being conceived on Yom Kippur? Because the parents figured to be chassidim, yeah, anyway. Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha, a blurus through all the hand kemodi. And Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha says that he saw they had a chup, they had like a long hair like the emodi, like the goyim. Again, Maharal says that means. No, well, it could be for other desire, but even if not, it's chukas a goyim, it's acting in the ways of the goyim. So again, Maharal has the explanation that it means basically he saw, unlike the previous opinion, is that their whole existence is non existent. Here it's like their outward appearance is non existent. They're like goyim when they're really Jews. Also, they talk about the idea that when he says by Yureim is the same letter as Emodi rearranged.
It didn't happen many times in history that the children
No, not many times, but now, here we have. Rav Yechanan Amar, Rosh, Lo Hoysim HaMachluchus Shal Mitzvah. Rav Yechanan says, what did he see? He saw that there's not, the slightest bit of moisture of mitzvahs in them. In other words, completely devoid of mitzvahs. Okay. The question is, V'dumah V'zarai, when they ever have a fine, maybe they don't have any mitzvahs. What about their future descendants might have? Amar Abalaz, like Bumble, like Bizarre about Seif Kaladir, he saw with Ruach HaKodesh that neither they nor their children until the end of time would ever have any mitzvahs. And therefore, he felt justified in calling down a curse from the Eibishter on them and then having the bears attack them, which will continue tomorrow with the rest of the story. However, I will mention at this point, the Gemara is going to mention it tomorrow, but I will mention that actually the Gemara says that in the end, he became sick for a while for having done that. The fact that he, for having cursed them and caused bears to attack them. That he ended up being sick for a while because of that. Because he shouldn't have. The fact is, even if they're minorim and mitzvahs, even if all these terrible things about them, they're still Jews. Daven that they should do tshuva, whatever. Don't daven that they should be torn apart by bears. Or even let's say, for example, some of them say, fine, they have to call down a punishment from the Eibishter and then let it be something painless, not something involving being torn apart by wild animals or whatever. For all that, but so we'll continue the rest of the story tomorrow.